Hello, and welcome to the Book Speaks podcast, where the book speaks for itself. I'm your host, Benjamin Douglas, and this is the show where each week I read a chapter from a different indie author. Thanks for joining me for today's reading. Hello, happy Friday, everyone. Readers and writers alike, thanks for joining me for episode number 22 of the Book Speaks podcast, where the book speaks for itself. As always, I'm your host, Benjamin Douglas. And today, I will be reading the first chapter from Marota, the debut fantasy novel by indie author L.L. McNeil. Very excited for this, and I'm going to speak a little bit about McNeil and Marota, but before I do, I'd like to share a poetry reading. So this is my poem, Beloved Be Your Name. Now, when my eyes grow full of my death, I smile, if a little sadly, knowing that you, my son, will hold these words within yourself long after I have fled. My son, who is on earth, beloved be your name. Take love to every face, to every burning hate, and every dull flame of apathy. Take passion and charity and play to the darkest wells of our eyes, the coldest songs of our appetites. Break walls with the spirit of your voice. Shine light into the ditches and the lee of every stone. Find caterpillars with the fingers of your mind. Coax them into divine beings. Watch in wonder as they fly. And lead our suffering to redemption, as it is in heaven, as it is in the quiet of the mind. All right, that is my poem, Beloved Be Your Name, which I wrote shortly after the birth of our first son here in Iowa, who is now 10 months old. If you haven't heard me wax about trying to be a writer with a 10-month-old yet, it's very exciting. Frankly, not much gets done. But it's one of those things, you know, it's cliche to say it, but it's really true. I wouldn't trade it for anything. Completely changes your world, though, especially if, like me, you're just kind of selfish, kind of lazy, kind of jealous of your free time. No free time anymore, but that's okay. Enough about me. Back to L.L. McNeil. I'm going to begin, as always, by reading L.L. McNeil's Amazon author bio. Hello. Thank you for visiting my author page. I'm a professional copywriter and a self-published fantasy author. Words and writing have always been part of my life. My debut novel, Marota, was released as an ebook in April 2017 and in paperback in May 2017. It's the first book in a series of six. Grab your copy here, http://www.llmcneil.com/books. I have a degree in psychology and a fascination with MBTI. I'm an INFJ. I love reading and writing about introversion. I'm a petrol head and thalassophile and adore castles, sunshine, and dragons. I've always lost myself in the fantasy worlds I read and create, and it's been an incredible achievement to finally publish my own. www.llmcneil.com. Very lovely. And as always, I'll have a link to LL's author page and her Amazon author page, both in the show notes. So check that out. Good. So if you're anything like me, raise your hand. Raise your hand if fantasy is like one of your first literary loves. I mean, I've mentioned before on the show, it's funny, I'm not particularly widely read in the fantasy genre. I tend to stick to a handful of classics. Time and again, I'll go back to Middle Earth, I'll go back to Earthsea. Of course, some of the first books I ever read when I was learning how to read on my own without my mom reading to me were like Narnia. So, you know, fantasy is really deeply embedded in my reader psyche, very near and dear to my heart. And I always loved, for that reason, featuring a fantasy book on this show. And Maroda is no exception. I'm really enjoying it so far. It's a well-told tale. And some of the tropes or images or ideas which you might enjoy, there's magic, obviously. There are airships, apparently. Kind of exciting if you're like a big Baroker fan like I am. Love that fantasy steampunk crossover stuff. I'm going to read L.L. McNeil's book description, her book blurb for Maroda, now, as featured on Amazon. Linaria is a world where dragons are revered as gods, where airships rule the skies, and where war is stirring. For Maroda, a former Goldstone, her life of luxury ends following her father's sudden death. When her city is destroyed by a dragon, she and her sister ally with a sky pirate and narrowly escape the carnage, only to find a vigilante from an exiled race has left a trail of destruction everywhere his growing army has traveled. With compulsion at his fingertips, he strengthens his hold over Linaria's people by stealing the power of dragons. It's only a matter of time before Maroda, too, is forced to submit. With war nipping at her heels and danger lurking in her companions and adversaries, Maroda must quickly learn about herself, her world, and the dragons so intent on reducing it all to ash. Maroda is the first novel in an epic six-book saga following a group of characters as war rages across their world. With pirates and soldiers, smiths and princes, Linaria is a vibrant land with a deeply unsettled past and an equally ominous future. Also available in paperback direct from my website. Good. Something else that's really interesting me so far about this story is the class system. Oh, I love this. It's another beginning to the hero's journey, right? Some hero's journeys start with someone rags to riches, right? Boy on the farm, Luke on Tatooine, Harry under the stairs, and others begin with an exiled prince or an exiled noble of some kind. And Maroda sounds like she comes from aristocracy and has recently been humbled in that class system. And I kind of love that story because right away, it's instigating this momentum of self-discovery, right? And learning about the world. So you get to learn about the world of Linaria through Maroda's eyes as she also learns about it in a way for the first time. With her new identity. I think it's a very clever story writing tactic. Yeah. And a lot of times, if you take a classist approach to writing fiction too, you've got me, because my favorite, like, classic novelist is Alexandre Dumas, the first, the father, the père. So the D'Artagnan romances, the Count of Monte Cristo, any of that stuff, all that stuff surrounding the rise of Louis XIV. I live for that stuff. I mean, come on. Have you guys seen Versailles, the TV show, yet? It's great. It's great stuff. So that's my plug for class-based and classist-based entertainment, which I'm not entirely sure is really healthy right now, the situation in much of the Western world. But there we are. It's interesting stuff. So, one more thing I want to mention is that I encountered L.L. McNeil through Twitter, interestingly enough, and I'm a little embarrassed to admit this. I don't know exactly how I found her or connected with her. I think she was like following someone who I followed And it was like a friend of a friend situation. And for a few days on Twitter, I was just like following every author I could find, especially if they seemed to have similar interests, just to sort of build up my own followers. You know how that works. And there's kind of a raging debate in the author community, the indie author community, Facebook versus Twitter, which is better. And in my so far humble experience, neither is great for connecting with fans the way that a simple mailing list is, right? And that's your secondary line of connection. The first line of connection is just getting a backlist up, getting a lot of books out. All of that being said, of course, social media is still great. I'm finding primarily I connect with other authors that way. I do a lot of networking. And that's where I found L.L. McNeil. I've admired the cover and the blurb and all of the things she says about Murata for a while now, for a couple of months now, because everything she puts out just looks very professional and very on message and on trope for what I want to read in a fantasy novel. So kudos to you, L.L. McNeil. I think you're doing a good job with your publicity. I hope it's paying off in dividends, and I really hope that you get that next book out soon and start to see a big following. L.L. McNeil is also a participant in a podcast called Garage Fiction, which is a really interesting and cool-sounding premise. Apparently, a handful of authors have banded together and agreed to write a piece of fiction a week, and they get together on the show, and they talk about what they've been reading, and they talk about what they've written, and it's just kind of fun. It's super cash. It's like a writing club. Reminds me of Anne of Green Gables. It's kind of fun. So check that out if you're interested. Garage Fiction. I'll leave a link to that in the show notes as well. Podcasters, gotta love podcasters. I want to mention lastly that, as always, this reading does not come from an official audiobook. It's only my reading, performed and recorded just for the purpose of this podcast. I'm not charging you any money to listen to it, and it is performed and presented here with the author's permission. Check out the show notes for links, and do come back next week. We've got a couple more interviews coming up over the course of the fall. It's going to be exciting, and of course, I'll keep filling you in on my own publishing journey as I continue to crank out some military science fiction. Thanks again for being here, and I'll see you next week. Enjoy the reading. Murata, Book 1, by L.L. McNeil. Chapter 1. Morning dew flavored her skin with the taste of autumn. Pale sunlight filtered through the steel-barred window, and Murata shivered in the dank cell of Rose Castle dungeon. She shifted her position to ease the cramp developing in her aching back and legs. She was not in chains, thank Rhea, but it did not take away the fear and uncertainty which plagued her. She wouldn't be beheaded, surely. It had been an idle threat to keep the crowd from retaliating at her sudden arrest, hadn't it? Murderers were beheaded, or traitors to the crown. Surely they wouldn't kill a woman who had voiced an opinion. Goosebumps rose on the flesh of her legs and arms after brushing the cold stone floor, and she flinched, a light clink sounding within her skirt. Reaching carefully into the deep pocket, she grasped 3 coins. "I'd forgotten about you," she said, smiling down at the silver florins. She did not have the chance to enjoy finding the forgotten money. The door to the dungeon rattled, and muffled shouting carried through from the other side, along with grunts from the guard restraining a new, aggressive-sounding prisoner. Eyes wide, Murata looked for somewhere to hide her treasure. Surely if she put it back in her pocket, the coins would jingle when she moved. The window, perhaps? No, they would be too easily seen between the bars. Scrabbling to the corner of her cell, Marota spied a cracked floor slab. She could hear the steel hinges of the oak door creak as it was heaved open, and she had no time to look for an alternative hiding place. Shuffling over on her knees, one fist clenched around her coins, she wedged the fingers of her free hand under the stone slab. It was rough against her skin, but Marota lifted it just high enough to slide the coins into the gap. The door of the dungeon slammed shut. The slab dropped back into place, and the new prisoner entered the chamber. The same guard who brought her to the cell barely an hour ago was now wrestling with another prisoner, a woman, and a lowborn one, from her insults and the rasp in her voice. She spat and kicked, trying to bite and wriggle out of the guard's hold, and Marota pressed herself to the back of the cell. She watched, anxious, as the guard frog marched the new prisoner to the cell. Pressing her against the metal, he took the keys from his waist, unlocked the gate, slid it open, and threw the woman into the cell. Blood spattered the floor from an open gash on the woman's shoulder, bringing a splash of color to the drab gray dungeon. She immediately whirled around and threw herself at the gate, reaching between the bars and scrabbling for the guard's face with chipped nails.
"You pig! Bastard! Get this gate open now, or I swear to Rhea herself, you'll pay!"
"Amara, you're done. You know we've been after you for years. No threat will change that," he replied with a shrug, out of reach of her flailing hands and at ease.
"Morgan, I'll kill you for this!"
she spat back, one hand reaching up to cover the wound on her left shoulder. Blood trickled through her fingers as she tried to stem the flow.
"At least get me a medic! You don't want me to bleed to death in here, do you?"
Her eyes narrowed on the young man as he glanced over her wound. "You're not going to die. Calm down. I'll see what I can do. Try not to cause too much disruption," he sighed, walking back towards the door.
"What about Kana? I hope you're not going to destroy that ship. She's faster than anything the Imperial fleet has,"
Amara called, walking along the gate of the cell, keeping as close to Morgan as possible.
"Be of some use, won't she?"
"I don't know. It's not my decision. She's locked up safe and sound, just like you," he answered, ignoring her glare as he heaved the dungeon door open and slammed it shut behind him. As the sound of his footsteps echoed away, Marota remained still. Amara hadn't noticed her, and she was keen to keep it that way. Who knew who she was, or what she had done to warrant being locked up? Marota had no intention of finding out, preferring instead to keep away from the uncouth criminal. She slid slowly down the wall until she was half sat, half crouched on the floor, heart racing and breath held. Perhaps if she stayed quiet enough, Amara would not spot her before Morgan returned to take one of them away. After a moment, Amara turned and looked round the cell, pausing to glare at Marota when she spotted her.
"What do you think you're looking at, little girl?"
Marota was lost for words. I didn't mean...
Good. Shut up and keep out of my fucking way, then.
Amara interrupted, looking over the rest of the cell, scowling at the floor, walls, and windows.
Damned if I'm staying in here long enough to be executed.
Maroda said nothing, remaining crouched and watching her carefully. She tried to keep out of Amara's way as she stepped towards the window. The new prisoner released her hand from her shoulder and grabbed onto the bars, letting go after giving each of them a short pull, leaving the metal slick with blood.
Damn.
Amara glanced at Maroda again, who met her gaze defiantly, before she looked to the steel bars of the cell door. Despite the castle's age, the cells seemed well kept. An escape plan was not forthcoming. Amara swore again and leaned her back against the metal gate, her arm returning to cover the wound on her twitching shoulder.
What happened?
Maroda dared, expecting to be insulted again. Amara shrugged.
Too much haste. Got sloppy. Made a mistake. Never again, I tell you.
The older woman closed her eyes, allowing silence to fill the cell once again. Maroda took the opportunity to study Amara's face. She had short, dark hair, roughly cut and in no way styled, in contrast to Maroda's longer, messy brown tresses. She wore no powders on her face or oils in her hair. A thin scar lined her left cheek, just below her dark eyes, and she looked grubby, as though she hadn't bathed for months. Maroda dropped her gaze every time Amara moved, lest she caught her staring. She guessed the injured woman to be in her 30s, but wounds and dirt did a lot to age a person, so Maroda couldn't be sure. All she knew was she feared her aggression and hoped she would keep her distance while they were locked up together.
That fool Morgan is no more fit to be in the Imperial Guard than you are to be in here.
Amara said, breaking the silence after watching Maroda for several minutes.
I heard what you did this morning, standing up to that foreign bastard.
Maroda flinched as Amara swore again, but was flattered her deed that morning had not gone unnoticed. Then again, she had been arrested very publicly, so she supposed word of her actions, a Goldstone's actions, no less, would spread like wildfire. Not that she was really considered a Goldstone anymore, her heart sinking as she thought to the 3 florins she had hidden, her only money in the world. It was all that remained of a vast inheritance which should have ensured she and her sister were well kept until the end of their days. Maroda nodded.
Thank you.
That the only reason Morgan arrest you? Or you do something else? Sleep with some other Goldstone you shouldn't have or something?
Amara pressed.
What? No, nothing like that. I would never.
Amara's cackle filled the room, echoing off the stone.
You Goldstones are all the same, aren't you? Little goody-goody rich girls who never get in trouble or do anything wrong.
I'm not a Goldstone. Not anymore.
Maroda replied softly.
Yes, well, I can see that, can't I?
Amara grinned, licking her lips and shifting her hold on her injured shoulder.
Can't buy yourself out of this one, can you?
Do you want me to help with that? Maroda asked. I can use some cloth to stem the blood, at least until help comes. Amara paused for a moment before nodding.
Yeah, if you can.
Maroda tore a strip of fabric from the bottom of her skirt. It was thick, dark cotton, and carefully shuffled over to Amara. When the other woman dropped her hand from her shoulder, Maroda wrapped the length of cloth around Amara's wound as best she could. It won't stop the bleeding completely, but it might help a little, Maroda said, wiping her bloodied hands on her skirt. Amara inspected the bandage for another long moment before approving it with a nod. She glanced back through the cell bars to the dungeon door and sighed, and it did not take long before her gaze drifted to the rest of the cell.
Oh, great! Not a Varkane, too! She said, her voice taking on the same edge as before.
But I'm not...
Maroda began, before following Amara's gaze to the back corner of the cell, set in shadow. Confused, Maroda looked back to Amara and back to the corner, squinting in the darkness as she tried to make out what Amara could see. Her heart began to race again when she spotted the silhouette of another person sat in the shadows. Had someone else been there all the time, and she hadn't noticed? How could that have happened? She had been locked up almost an hour.
I do love the sound of a panicked heartbeat.
Maroda stood up, her breathing quickening as she realized there was someone there. Someone who was far more of a threat than Amara could ever be. Stumbling backwards, Maroda tried to put as much distance between herself and the dark corner as she could.
Ah, yes, and there is the accompanying scent of fear. Such a nectar. Shut up, you filthy creature!
Amara growled on edge, but without the anxiety of Maroda.
What in Rhea's name we are doing in the same cell as you, I don't know. What happened to enforced segregation? Perhaps they forgot. Being invisible is our speciality.
Maroda's heart continued to pound, but she couldn't quite make out the features of the Varkane. The cell was too poorly lit, and he was keeping too still. She could have sworn she had checked the cell over when she was first thrown in and found it empty. Then again, she had never before come across a Varkane face to face and was terrified.
Come out from the shadows, Varkane. Show yourself,
Amara ordered, her hand returning to cover the wound on her shoulder. Maroda wanted to object, but her voice had left her.
No, I am chained.
Amara's shoulders dropped as she visibly relaxed, and Maroda followed suit. Perhaps that was why she hadn't been attacked earlier. She had grown up on stories of brutal Varkane killings and did not wish to be the center of the next one.
Well, you're just a worm then, aren't you?
Amara cackled, straightening her stance and wandering over to the edge of the shadow.
tied up and left for dead. It's all you're worth.
Be quiet. Amara crouched down, a sneer on her face.
I don't think so. I don't take orders from anyone, not least the likes of you. Tell me, Varkane, were you given a name at birth, or just abandoned along with the thousands of others?
She asked, head tilted slightly to one side.
Dumped in a hole in the ground and left to rot like the maggots you are.
Maroda did not know what might come of taunting such a dangerous creature, but Amara clearly thought he posed no threat.
Sepora, he answered. I know you are Amara, a sky pirate and thief and murderer, just as much as I am.
Maroda remained quiet as her companion ignored Sepora and took to pacing around the cell. With her good hand, Amara grabbed one of the bars on the gate and shook it furiously.
Morgan! Where the hell is my medic?
Silence responded. She stepped away from the gate, looked around the cell again, and tapped her fingers against her arm, clearly rattled by Sepora's words. It did not take long for Amara to notice the cracked stone slab, and she paused.
Oh? What's this?
She dropped to one knee and picked at the cracked stone. Within seconds, she had lifted the slab and was rewarded with the glint of silver.
Every cloud, she said, snatching up the coins and examining them. 3 florins! Perfect!
Amara pocketed them as quickly as she found them, leaving Maroda to clench her fists in response. She had no desire to get into a conflict with Amara, especially if she was a murderer, as Sepora claimed. Despite those simple coins being the only thing of any worth she had left. All her fight had gone out after that morning. Why she had even bothered to stand up to that man, she had no idea. He was obviously a guest of the royals. He had been invited into Rose Castle and was surrounded by imperial guards, with a following of soldiers of his own. But she could not accept the words he spewed to the crowd. Others may have, and that was their choice as far as Maroda was concerned. But she would not allow her family to be dictated to by anyone, especially a warmongering bully like this foreigner. Her immediate arrest only proved she'd touched a nerve. Imprison or behead enough people, and folks soon stop standing against you. Closing her eyes, Maroda exhaled, resigning herself to her situation. Beheaded or left to rot in a cell with 2 murderers, she couldn't tell which fate was worse. It took only a few minutes before the dungeon door was forced open once again, but it was not Morgan who walked down the corridor. It was a woman of 20 years, clutching a ring of bronze keys close to her chest as she tiptoed across the cold stone in soft leather shoes.
Aaron!
Maroda gasped, leaping to her feet and clutching at the bars.
What in Rhea's name are you doing here? How did you get into the castle? Shh, never you mind about that. I'm getting you out now,
Aaron replied, glancing over her shoulder. The sisters shared a similar look, dark brunette hair and hazel eyes, but Aaron's face was soft and round, in contrast to Maroda's leaner features. Amara narrowed her eyes at the newcomer, unconcerned with the hows and whys.
Get on with it, then. Hurry up!
Aaron nodded and tried each key quickly, breathing a sigh of relief as the successful one clicked and the door lifted off the lock. Before Aaron could move, Amara wrenched the door open and shoved past.
Get out now if you know what's good for you,
she called over her shoulder before racing down the corridor and through the door. Unfazed by Amara's briskness, Aaron turned to her sister.
You heard her. Let's go.
Maroda paused at the door and looked back to the corner of the cell. Do you have all the keys? There's someone else back there, chained up, she said.
Maroda, this isn't a jailbreak. I'm here to get you and get out, Aaron replied, looking back to the door. They'll be here any minute, and I'll be locked up too. Let's go!
Shaking her head, Maroda grabbed the keys and ran to the dark corner before hesitating.
You won't attack me if I let you out? She asked, feeling meek and small once again.
No.
She took another step forward, trying to make out his features in the poor light.
How do I know I can trust your word? Maroda asked, crouching down and thumbing through the keys.
The promise of a Varkane is known throughout Lunaria as truth.
She could feel him smiling in the darkness, and it made her more uneasy than ever. Ignoring Aaron's frantic calls, she took a deep breath. She couldn't leave someone behind. She just couldn't. And should he ever escape, she did not want to incur the wrath of the Varkane for having left him in the cell. Perhaps the reason for her actions were not so noble, after all.
Okay, I'll leave the keys with you. Are your hands free?
Yes.
Maroda dropped the keys on the floor and ran back to the gate.
There's a Varkane in there? Why did you release him? We should be locking the gate, not letting him out!
Aaron cried, incredulous. By the time Maroda had turned around to check, Sepora had unlocked himself and was on his feet, racing through the door faster than she could blink.
Thanks very much, Sepora said, grinning.
Both rows of dagger-like teeth flashed white as ivory from his dull, gray skin. He was thin, shorter than a full-grown man, but lean and supple. Dried blood covered his clawed hands, and the clothes he wore were faded black. A mop of dark, greenish hair matched his eyes, and he watched the two girls with vertical slit pupils widely dilated in the dim light of the dungeon. Before either sister could respond to their first sight of a Varkane, he, too, raced off without another word.
Ugh, those creatures are vile!
Aaron shivered.
Come on, before that guard realizes what's happened!
She grabbed Maroda's arm and led the pair out the dungeon and into the lower halls of the castle.
There's a servant's entrance just along here, by the back of the kitchens. If we hurry, they won't know you're gone for hours.
Maroda's heart soared as they ran through empty halls.
She could practically smell the sunlight bursting through the windows as they raced along. The nightmare was going to be over. She wasn't going to die. Thank the dragons above for family and the resourcefulness of her sister. As they ran, Maroda smelled bread baking.
"The kitchens are on the other side of this wall," Aaron panted. "The door's just at the end of the corridor."
Maroda readied herself for a final sprint, when a door burst open to their right, and Morgan hurtled through it, tackling her to the ground.
"Not so fast," he yelled, grabbing at her legs as she wriggled out of his hold.
"Get off her!"
Aaron screamed, circling back to kick at his hands. Between the two of them thrashing around, Morgan's hold loosened, and Maroda managed to get back on her feet. Without pausing for breath, the two sprinted to the end of the corridor and straight out into the bustling street. The afternoon sunlight was dazzling after so long in the darkness, and Maroda took in a deep breath.
"Stop right there!"
Morgan shouted, only a few paces behind, but the escaped prisoners raced into the crowded market streets.
This concludes another episode of the Book Speaks podcast, where the book speaks for itself. Thanks for joining me, your host, Benjamin Douglas, for another indie author reading. If you liked what you heard, be sure to visit http://thebookspeakspodcast.wordpress.com for more episodes and for links to the author's website and the author's Amazon author page in the show notes. If you'd like to follow me on my own author journey, you can find me at http://benjamindouglasbooks.wordpress.com. And of course, if you're an indie author interested in having your work featured on the show, or if you're interested in discussing having your book read and produced by me as an audiobook, feel free to contact me at benjamindouglasbooks@gmail.com. Thanks for joining me today. I hope you have a productive and enjoyable weekend.